This is Big Dave.
And Robbie.
And you are listening to
Rock Paper Podcast.
Rock Paper Podcast. Rock Paper Podcast. Rock Paper Podcast, y'all.
Welcome to Rock Paper Podcast, episode 42. My name is Chris Bemeter.
I'm Shane Presley.
Remember, you can follow us on Facebook, Twitter, get the episodes on iTunes and Stitcher, all that good stuff. This week, we're hanging out with the guys from the Ink Spot Tattoo Shop here. They are involved with a pretty big music thing that's kind of built over the years, the Ink Spot Block Party. We're hanging out in the shop. Thanks for having us, guys. If you want to introduce yourselves. And
I'm Big Dave. David Kanoy on Facebook. About everybody knows me as Big Dave. I don't think there's too many people that actually know me anymore as David Kanoy, but yeah, Big Dave.
I'm Burt P. Rocket, and you can find me on Facebook as Robbie Callery. No, my name's Robbie. My friends call me Burt.
Stage name.
Yeah,
that's one thing I think is funny, like Scooter, Baggins, and stuff. Like everybody just knows him as Scooter, and like nobody.
Dave's like the nickname guru.
Yeah.
Yeah, and I got Big Dave. Yeah. Right. That's the nickname that is attached to me.
Well, we're on the way here, and Shane was telling me about, I guess you have a shirt that says Big Dave approves, and their singing was all about that bass.
Yeah,
and you're like, I do not approve of this. Take that down immediately. We do not approve of this this nonsense you're putting on in the car.
Yeah.
That Big Dave approved shirt actually started from David Freeze. I was tattooing on him, and he said, and man, we were joking and laughing. When he comes out, we have a blast, man. I thank the world of him. I become really good friends with him. And we were joking and cutting up, and he's like, dude, I need a shirt. This is right before he was going to L.A. He says, I need a shirt with your face on it, like a caricature of your face with two thumbs up, and says, Big Dave likes this, is what he... And we were laughing about it, and he's like, yeah, I'll wear it to the press conference. And he's like, and just see how long it takes somebody to ask me, what's that shirt about? And then I would and he's like, I won't tell him. He's like, I won't tell him who Big Dave is. I won't say anything, and people will start wondering, whatever. We were laughing about it, and then he kept on saying, no, seriously, you got to get a shirt made. So a couple days later, I sent him a message, and asked him if he was sober, and he said, yeah. Hey, you gotta make sure
you're right.
You know, I said, were you serious? You want that shirt made up? And he's like, yes, make me up 5 of those shirts. And I said, all right. So I went and made up 5 shirts and drew up this little thing and made up 5 shirts, and he started wearing it. He wore it to the pageant like a couple days later and took a bunch of pictures with people, and then everybody started asking me where to get them and stuff, so I just went to the same people and had them make me up several more.
That's awesome. What's crazy about the Big Dave Approved shirt is we've had several different Ink Spot t-shirt designs that are all different, and they're cool. And then we had our own clothing line, which is Hellbound LTD, and those were all cool shirts, and all the Block Party shirts. And we get more people coming in here being like, hey, man, I want one of those Big Dave Approved shirts than any of these other shirts that we've put out. I mean, it's just a picture of Big Dave, and it's everybody wants it.
I think everybody wants it because it's funny.
Yeah.
Right.
It's humorous. I don't know.
It works.
It works, right. So I've had some people take some funny pictures with it, and then I've had... some pictures of.
Did you ever imagine that you'd have your face on a t-shirt and maybe people would want it? Like, that's pretty awesome.
For real. And it really kind of bothered me at first. Like, I was like, I don't want people thinking I've got this big head, you know? But when Freeze asks you to do something, you do it, you know? So.
Yeah. I like that they said he. Then when I think he's got a big head, when it's all it is a big head on a.
Right. I don't want the ego.
Right.
Yeah. It works, though.
Yeah, I mean, that's kind of reminds me of that, like, Steve-O. Steve-O's got that tattoo on his back, like the thumbs up and the dude. And it's kind of like that whole.
I'll say you should have asked David when he said to put it on t-shirt. She'd be like, well, how about I tattoo it on you and then you can show it there. And just throw it out there and just see.
He is very particular about his tattoos. Right? He doesn't listen to suggestions very well.
He knows what he wants, right?
He knows what he wants, and
But that's, I mean, it is kind of cool, like, that, you know, it's almost like a, you know, like, you're sort of the face of the brand, you know, kind of as, you know, like, you see people at the Ink Spot block parties and all this stuff, and they recognize, obviously, one, your size, but the beard and the overall, and right. overalls and stuff, yeah, you people, so you have that recognizable image and the face of things going on out here, so, I guess it works to have it right on the front of the shirt and stuff too.
Right. So if it helps business, I mean, right. Yeah. Who cares?
You know? It helps. We actually haven't made any more since the block party, and we were waiting to the end of the year to get through tax season, and then we're going to make some more, and cool. So we'll be having some more coming up pretty soon.
Yeah,
awesome.
So you mentioned Freeze, and I know like some of the other people, like I know you guys have been associated with. You said Clint Lowry was out here, and Shinedown, and Will Hogue, and some pretty big clientele.
It's crazy. We Dave had the idea to tattoo on Shinedown after meeting them one night when they were playing at Pops. So you can imagine how long that was ago that they were playing at Pops. But talked about tattooing them. We probably spent what 2 years.
We spent 3 years.
3 years trying to tattoo on him. And Brent flat out told Dave, he's like, hey, if you can make it backstage, we'll do this. And we spent 3 years trying to get backstage any way possible. And once we did, man, it just took off. Like, now it's not strange to have people come in the shop that you would never believe would be in Troy, Missouri. Yeah. You know?
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, that's what I was saying. It is kind of crazy to think like a group like Shinedown that goes all over the world, but they'll come to Troy, Missouri, and you know
they've actually never been into our shop.
Yeah, so well, I mean,
I just want to verify. Yeah, I don't want to ever get accused of lying or whatever.
Yeah.
We've tattooed on them multiple times, and you know, we become friends with them, but they have never actually made it out to Troy, Missouri. Yeah. So,
But
a lot of other people.
Yeah,
have.
Sure. Yeah.
Clint Lowry has. He's a man. I think. Have you had the chance to meet him?
I haven't met him. No. I'm aware of him, but yeah, I haven't actually spoke to him.
If I can help arrange it, I will.
All right.
He's a top notch man, top notch human being. So yeah. I've been and you know what? I'm going to give props for props. Lux, 105.7 The Point. She is. How the Shinedown thing happened. I met Shinedown, and they came to Pops, and one of my buddy's motorcycles broke down in the parking lot. So we spent hours after the concert trying to fix this motorcycle out in the parking lot, and everybody was gone. I mean, there was two cars in the parking lot and the tour bus. Anyway, back then Jason was a guitar player for Shinedown. Jason and Brent ended up coming out and asking, you know, what's going on, and stood there and bullshit with us while we... worked on a motorcycle, which was cool. That was my first real encounter with, you know, a musician of that caliber. Mm. And they're like, whenever we come back into town, man, we'll get some tattoos, man. And I didn't take them seriously. And then as we were leaving, as they were pulling out, they're like, Ink Spot Troy, we'll, and I'm like, right on. So he did remember. I'm like, maybe he's serious. Well, next time they came into town, or they were coming, I was trying to figure out, I mean, I didn't have his number. I didn't have any way of contacting them, So we went to, the Point was giving away Point Fest tickets at Hot Shots or at one of the bars. And so we went up there and we're trying to win meet and greet passes. And I'm like, if I can get meet and greet passes, I can go down there. We can take all our tattoo stuff with us.
Yeah.
I can go down there and
get set up there.
Right. So. That was my game plan, and when I went to the Hot Shots or whatever it was,
we went to several of them. Yeah. It was like we'd be here at the shop, and they would announce it. You know, somebody would text us and be like, "Hey, they're giving away backstage passes." They were doing it was the Point Fest pit stops is what it was, and we'd load up, and take off, and go wherever they were at because we needed those backstage passes.
Well, back then Tony Patrico and Lox were just interns,
right?
So. Mm. I'm trying to blackmail them and bribe them, you know, for it. And they're like, we give, you know, t-shirts and tickets out, but we don't have anything to do with that. I mean, we just draw names. We take names. And So I ended up winning some tickets in one of our 15 nights. You know, we won some tickets, and I got down there, and I hustled the Jägermeister guy who was doing the meet and greet that was in the Jägermeister tent. Told him I would do some tattoos on him and if he got me in, and that's how it started, man. But ever since then, Lux has been a huge promoter of us, and has helped us out. I mean, I've hustled my ass off. We've hustled our asses off making this happen, but there's been... she's the one that introduced or had Freeze call me, and she's the one that introduced me to Clint Lowry, you know, and she's a great person.
Yeah.
So.
I think that's one thing about, like, especially tattoos, is it's really big word of mouth, because if somebody gets somebody they like, and I mean, because a lot of people put a lot of trust in, obviously, the tattoo artist, because it is something that, you know, you want something not just that you're going to have for life, but something that looks good, you know. I've seen a lot of pictures of bad tattoos on the internet, and you know, and I've seen some of the stuff you guys have done, and they're phenomenal. And I think when people, you know, get those things they really like, it's they want to brag about it, but also say, hey, go see them, because it, like I said, it helps your business and wants to promote you guys, because I think there's such a high level of respect for that tattoo artist who does something that something means so much to
right.
to people. So I think that's.
It's super humbling, man. It really, really is. Me and my wife were talking about this the other night. Like, the fact that people drive, and I don't know that all tattoo artists think, I absolutely know that all tattoo artists do not think like this, but the people drive out, wherever they're coming from, even if they're in Troy or they're driving from St. Louis, mm-hmm. there's other tattoo shops available to them. Mm-hmm. They drive, they take their hard-earned money, and they choose me or Bert or somebody else in the shop yeah. to change their life forever. Like, very right. few things in this world are you going to spend money on that's going to change your life forever. I don't care if it's a house, a car, mm-hmm. Even, you know, a boob job. You're going to get a fake boobs. There's the updates mm-hmm. 10 years later that you've got to do, whatever. You know, yeah. this is something... it's going to change your lives forever, man. And I get to share that with each and every person that asked me to do it. And it's when you can sit back and think about it, it's super humbling. It's that's why I said I didn't want my people think my head was big, you know, with the t-shirt yeah. thing, because it still humbles me. It still's like, man, you know, I make a living off of being a part of sometimes one of the best experiences of people's lives, you know, yeah. whether it's a memorial tattoo or, yeah, right. You know, they never forget that. And I've seen I've been in the industry long enough to know that there's people come in, even some of our older clients come in, and you can ask them about each one of their tattoos, and they'll either go, I got this one in Taiwan, or I got this one, you know, in Cleveland. The guy's name was Steve. And they can tell you about the guy who did it, or they'll go, I got this one, and they always remember what state they were in or what country they were in, but they don't always remember the artist. And I've just paid attention to that somehow that artist didn't, for me, that what that says is somehow that artist didn't bond with that customer, didn't mm-hmm. appreciate the fact that
there's not really a cooler feeling than when your customer, you sit there and you have a conversation, and the conversations are extremely personal. Sometimes they get downright weird. They're so personal, you know, but it's a cool feeling. And then to get people that have been coming to our shop, I mean, this is our third location here in town, and we've grown and had a better shop every time. But to have people that have been coming since our first shop, and they come in here and, you know, they're friends of ours, and we know their lives, and they know our lives strictly through the shop. I mean, you know, it's like Dave said, it's super humbling. It's a really cool experience to get to share that with people. Yeah. You know,
telling Shane, did you guys have other shops in Troy here before this one opened up? Because I was telling him, I think I have a just a little, like, my first tattoo I ever got was a little St. Louis Cardinal one I got, like, right out of high school, and I think I got it at a tattoo place in Troy, and again, I can't remember, it was so long ago, I can't remember, I know it was in Troy, but I couldn't remember if it was the Ink Spot, and I was just, as I'm thinking about it, I just wonder if I got my first tattoo with you guys, you know, and...
Where's the tattoo at?
Right, I have it right inside my, arm, just a little carnal one, and I was just like,
that may have been
I remember where being in Troy. See, that's what I was trying to remember, because it was 2000.
It was a little tiny shop.
I think so, yeah.
Like,
it was a smaller one, because I remember my I went with my buddy Joe one day after work. I worked at Hackman Lumber out there and on K before it turned into a Gold's Gym or whatever. And this is, I think, 2005 maybe.
No, opened in 2006.
We'll see then. Yeah, I want to say it could have been 2006 too. I don't remember, because it was just after college. I can't remember if it was after my freshman year or sophomore year of college. But I just remember coming out here in Troy and getting this. And at the time, I was just like, oh, I'll get a cardinal tattoo, whatever. But I wondered if it was with you guys or not.
There is another shop in Troy, or there is still to this day another shop in Troy. But
yeah, I couldn't remember. I was telling her, I'm like, man, I wish I could remember. But again, I think that
one was called Flashbacks. Back then, it was called Flashbacks.
Gotcha. Yeah, I don't know. That's just, and I think it's something too with like when there. I think like now, because I have a couple other tattoos that I got like up at school when I was up in Maryville, and I think you do start to kind of appreciate more so and take more knowledge of who's doing your tattoos as you get more. I think when I first got this one, I was just like, oh, I'm getting a tattoo, cool, you know.
Right.
But and I think that's how you said with like building relationship or people kind of building respect with their artists, is I think they start to appreciate the art of it. It's not just somebody going, oh, I'll just draw some tattooed on you. There's a little more that goes into it. And I think, as I've gotten a few more, you kind of start to really do appreciate and what you guys do, and not just think.
Oh, and
just
as the dollar figures go up, and the bigger the tattoo,
exactly.
The time, more connection and time you have with your tattoo.
Yeah, because I think this one probably took.
Prior to starting here, and I apprenticed under Dave back in 2007. Prior to starting here, I had several tattoos, and other than the one shop I used to go to, and the guy who tattooed me, his name was the shop, so I remembered his name. But I couldn't tell you the other people that tattooed me. And that's one thing that Dave always put in anybody that worked here. Like, shake hands with your customer, you know? Yeah. Introduce yourself. Get to know them. Because people walk away with that. Like, I may have clients that I'll run into on the street, and I don't remember who I did. A lot of times I'll remember the tattoo, but they remember me, you know? Today, for instance, I've had two people come in here that I don't know, or I don't remember knowing, and they come in here and request me for tattoos, you know? Yeah. That's cool, man. Like, you know, people coming in here and they want Robbie to do their tattoos.
That's a real problem and a real struggle, though. Exactly what I'm humble for is I'll go up to Walmart, be walking through Walmart, and some lady will be like, "Dave," and start talking to me, and she clearly we've bonded. So instantly, I know that at some point I've tattooed on her, but I can't remember her name. I can't remember a tattoo. I mean, this is what we do every single day.
Exactly.
So
they
will never forget us. But then they'll go, "Do you even know who I am?" Today I'm honest. I'm sorry. I don't, you know, because it's easier to get caught up in a lie, and you know. But that's the horrible part, is that we've changed their body forever. Yeah. They will remember it forever, and then, you know, a month down the road, we forget about that tattoo because we've had 60
and
more.
Hopefully, it's kind of like say a musician who goes to all these cities and met somebody, and then they come back a year later and they're like, "Oh, hey, do you remember me?" And it may have been not that it wasn't important to them, but they see people after, and so, I mean, I'm horrible if I meet somebody and then see him like 2 weeks later. I'll be like, "I'm sorry, I don't," and that's just because I think I met
Shane like 10 times before I remembered who he was.
It's just, but in the industry you're in, when you're seeing people every day and it's hard just in general because of the the sheer numbers that you see, it'd be impossible to remember every single story that was with every single tattooer, you know? So hopefully people understand that and aren't just like,
I always ask people, I'm like, "Show me, what did I tattoo on you?" And they'll show me. And usually I'm pretty good about remembering a tattoo, you know?
Yeah.
I mean, even ones that I did years and years ago, I can look at a tattoo and be like, "Okay, I remember that," you know? And that's usually my go-to. "Let me see your tattoo."
So all you listening, that's our scam.
There you
go. That's our go-to.
Yeah, we've got all kinds of clever tricks to find out your first name.
Right, yeah.
We won't share this.
You hide it in every tattoo. Like, put your name in there, like a little signature somehow.
Oh, yeah, that's right. You're Fred. Okay.
Cool. See this little middle finger I hit in there? That's how I know I did it. It's just my little calling card. So how long have each of you guys been doing tattoos?
I actually started out tattooing out of my house, which I do not condone or back then I didn't know any different. And I'm a recovering addict, alcoholic, so I had some offers to go to some shops, but I was scared of being in an environment and relapsing, and so started tattooing around my house, and I thought it wasn't that difficult to do, and it was extremely difficult, but now knowing what I know, it scares me to death when I see people tattooing around a house, just
yeah.
all the sanitation process that we go through, and the horror stories that I've heard and seen, and but that's how I started. I started out of my house. I went to college. I was going to be an art teacher. I had unfortunately caught a felony, and that prevents you from being a teacher. Mm-hmm. So I didn't know where to go. You know, I actually started my own company, doing a commercial cleaning company, and then I did had a steel rack company, and kind of put the art on the back hold. And when I went through a divorce, I lost my company, and it was time to start over, you know. Mm-hmm. So I started doing art again, trying to do art for a living, and that's when I started tattooing more and more. And Denny, my partner, he's a silent partner. Most people don't know. I mean, he's not a silent partner. He's my partner, but most people don't know about who he is or anything. He's actually the one that started the shop. He got all the permits and got everything and got the license, and found me and asked me if I wanted to come work for him. And I made a deal that if he made me partner, I would work with him. And we struck the deal, and the rest is history. Mm-hmm. So really, I was tattooing for about a year and a half out of my house before we opened up the shop. So other tattoo artists that listen to this, or people, that's extremely...
You were a scratcher.
Oh. Yeah. It's extremely
horrible. It's the worst insult you can give a tattoo artist.
It's extreme, right. Extremely horrible way to start tattooing. And the fact that I went from that to opening up a shop, like, I almost want to send out personal apology letters to everybody... that ever came into that first shop. You know, going, sorry, we didn't know what we were doing. You know, I had no idea what we were doing. Actually, we were fortunate enough, Omar Powers, he's a tattoo artist. He's actually at Trader Bob's in St. Louis right now. He was working at All-Star at the time, and their shop had burned down. So he was like shop hopping, working at different shops, and I found out through a friend of his, he was looking for a shop to work in just for, a couple days, a week, whatever. And so I said, yeah. And he came out, and just watching him and talking to him, and he was super kind and very generous with the knowledge that he had, and shared some things with me that changed the way I tattooed, changed the way I ran business, changed my sanitation process, changed a whole lot of stuff. And then, we've just grown, man.
Yeah.
So I'm fairly new. We're both, and then shortly after we opened up the shop, I started apprenticing Robbie. So it was like the blind leading the blind. You know?
I wanted to be a tattoo artist all my life. When I was a kid, I wanted to be a tattoo artist, and I went to so many shops around the St. Louis area and tried to get apprenticeships, and everybody wanted, $3,000 and a no compete contract. Or some shops I'd walk in, and they were just total dicks to me. They threw me a toothbrush, told me I could start with the bathroom. You know, I get it. Like, you got to do a little something to pay for your apprenticeship, but that's not what I was looking for. I'd heard terrible things about Dave's shop and refused to go to a shop in Troy. And I got to a point in my life where, I was about to get married, and it was either I had to do it or, spend the rest of my life doing something I didn't want to do. And I walked in there, and I had my old hustle that I used to use when I'd go to check about an apprenticeship. I'd take my portfolio with me, and I'd ask like I was asking about a tattoo, and hope that they would ask me about my drawings. and I happened to come into the shop when Dave wasn't there, which I'm grateful that I did, because if Dave would have been there, he'd have probably been like, whatever, get out of here, you know. I happened to come in when Denny was in there, and he talked Dave into bringing me in as an apprentice, and it was by far one of the biggest accomplishments of my life, getting that apprenticeship. And that was back in 2007. I've been tattooing ever since.
Cool. That's awesome. Well, the shop's like awesome. I love the drawings that are up all around here. Like, is that pink?
Yep.
That my wife's like loves pink, so I just saw it.
I think everybody does.
Well, that's true. But that's one concert I got to give to my wife too. She's a huge. That's her jam.
That's one thing I wanted to ask you about. Like I know you got a few time lapse drawings on YouTube, and have you? I know you got like Kid Rock and Aaron Lewis and David Freese and I mean, obviously David's been out here, but have you heard anything from anybody else? Like,
No, I actually did.
Ellen? You had that, what, Ellen's wife?
I got Ellen, Portia de Rossi, yeah. And no, I actually, I'm a huge Kid Rock fan for multiple reasons. One is I like most of his music. Not all of his music, but I like most of his music. But that guy is brilliant. And I'm a business owner. I've owned a few businesses before we opened up the tattoo shop. You know, now we own a tattoo shop. We own a vapor locker here in Troy. It's a vapor shop. But that dude is a marketing genius. I mean, and he's brilliant. He's a brilliant musician. You know, the fact, if you've ever been to one, you've been to his concert before. He can play anything. Right. He can play everything. And he's the only musician that I'm aware of that any radio station in my car that I turn on, he could be playing on.
Sure.
That's a good point. Yeah.
I mean, any radio station. Yeah. I mean, he's been played on the religious channels, Only God Knows Why, and I mean, country, hip-hop channels, heavy metal, rock and roll. I mean, he's got it all, man. Yeah. And I'm just a fan of him personally. And
you talk about the marketing stuff. Like, over the summer, he charged a flat rate, $20 for all of his tickets, brought in his own beer vendors and cut out all the, big amphitheater prices and made everything like a more of affordable, for his fans and stuff. And, you know, and then what, t-shirts were all $20 or something too, instead of $40 like some. And I thought that was great because one, it allowed, you know, people that, you know, maybe haven't been to a show in a while to go see it. You know, you can go have a, you know, more of a reasonable night out,
right,
and enjoy a good show. But yeah, some of the concert tickets are just getting outrageous.
Right.
Oh, it's insane. I went to see Pearl Jam when they were just in town, and I forget what we wound up. We wound up buying tickets from a friend of ours, but the prices of tickets was insane. And it's like, man, you used to be able to go see a show for $50, you know.
Yeah.
And I mean, you know, there's older people that are like $50, and I look at $50 as, you know, that's cool. But I can't tell you last time I bought a concert T-shirt because. Yeah. You know, it used to be $20-$25 bucks for a T-shirt, and now you're looking at $40-$50 for a T-shirt.
Right?
Like, come on.
I think that's just. I mean, they've got to make money today, and that's. I don't know how we're gonna go. That's part of the part of my emphasis on the reality show that we're gonna be doing this. I think that not just in this industry, but in the music industry and in the motorcycle industry. And those are just three industries that I see intersecting, that intersect in my lives and the people in this network's eyes is the music. Every tattoo shop you pull up, there's somebody that rides a Harley, rides a motorcycle, and there's somebody that's either in a band or plays music or whatever. Every tattoo shop that I know of has got those two. It's just a subculture, you know, lifestyle, but there's this misconception now that if you're on the radio or you've got a hit or whatever, that you've made it big, and we both know that's not true.
Sure.
You know, and I deal with that all the time. I mean, people come in and see these pictures on my wall of like, and they're like, holy cow, you know, that's so and so, and the reality is that dude is just a working man trying. Mm-hmm. Fighting his ass off to make a living at whatever he's doing, and you know, I don't know how the I don't know how the internet and how the finances work, but I know that musicians today aren't making what they were 20 years ago.
And so
T-shirt prices go up and ticket prices go up. And
Well, I think that's where, I mean, artists make, there's so little money now from record sales because nobody's buying, that it's all from shows and touring, and that's why bands have to tour so much, and they're making essentially minimum wage because that's, you know, there's all those entities that have to pay, they pay for, and it's interesting. We've talked to a lot of bands, and it's just like, you know, nobody's in it to make the big bucks anymore. It's strictly almost a passion thing, and that's, I think, kind of weeds out the people who were in it for...
Same thing with tattoo thing. Industry.
Yeah.
The tattoo industry, man, I mean, I hear it from so many people going, you own a shop and whatever, you know, and they try to haggle with prices and whatever, and I'm like, I'm driving 1989 Crown Vic. You know, that's what I'm driving. Right. So you pulled up here in a brand new Charger. I don't want to hear about how much money I make, you know. The reality is
I'm borrowing one of your Crown Vics.
Right. You know? He's borrowing my Yeah, I think I'm driving a 1991 Crown Vic, and he's driving my 89 Crown Vic.
Okay, so you are rich. Okay, well, yeah, right. You don't have to lie on the podcast. Come on, I'll show you.
Loaded, man.
Yeah. Balling.
Gold.
I am super fortunate to be able to sustain a living, to sustain a life, and do this for a career. You know, that's... But I don't have insurance. I don't have... You know, a retirement, I don't have. I mean, there are sacrifices that we've made doing this job, but
coming into work every day and being happy to come into work every day.
I would say doing what you love is probably such a huge...
Priceless. It's priceless,
you know,
man.
Such a better thing than any type of dollar figure. I mean, sure, the comfort, it'd be nice to have a large sum of money, but I'm sure there's people who trade that money in to be able to say they come to work every day and be like, I love what I do.
There isn't one day that I've come in here. Not one day that I've dreaded coming to work. Mm-hmm. Not one day. I mean, there's days that I would much rather not be at work and be out riding the motorcycle or going to concerts or doing some fun stuff and not actually working. But there isn't one day that I've been like just not it's adamant all, about not coming
it's
to work.
Almost funny when you hear people talk about, you know, you ask them how they're doing, they're like, you know, work's got me doing this and that. And it's like, you know, you just get a smile on your face because it's never been that way. I mean, like he just said, you know, there's days where you'd rather be out riding motorcycles or something, but you get here and it's like, yeah, we got it good.
Well, you guys, so we've talked a little bit, you mentioned motorcycles and tattoos and the reality show. You want to, what all is that going to entail? Like, I know... Kind of mashing all that stuff together, right?
Yeah, about 3 years ago, man, I really don't enjoy watching any of the reality tattoo shows on television because none of them are reality. None of them are my reality. Well, they may be somebody's reality, and that's their problem with reality shows is I guess maybe they're somebody's reality, but I don't relate to any of them, you know. And I beat down. My customer. I mean, I have to watch these shows so that I understand what my customers next week are going to be walking through the door thinking or wanting or asking for, just to stay ahead of the game. And it's frustrating. And I was thinking in my head, I was sitting back there tattooing a customer that was rather quiet and wasn't very conversational. So, and Robbie was talking to a customer about one of the shows going, that's not the reality. We can't just go in the back and in 5 minutes draw up a back piece and come back out here and tattoo it on you in one session.
Yeah.
You know, that's television. That's not... And I was thinking, man, I wish there was a reality show that actually featured the reality of what it takes to start a shop, what it takes, the amount of work that goes into this, and the real working man, you know. And nothing against Kat Von D, but people have put Kat Von D up on this pedestal that's so high that it's crazy that there are artists out there that are unbelievable artists that blow Kat Von D out of the water. Sure. You know, and nothing against Kat Von D. There's artists out there blow me out of the water. I know where I rank in the standings, you know.
Yeah.
But the world doesn't. Yeah. The world thinks Kat Von D is...
Yeah, it's the exposure.
Yeah.
I mean, so So, and I was back there thinking about it, and then I was thinking, it's that same misconception that, you know, that people think that we're loaded. You know, that if you're a tattoo, the television featuring tattoo artists now has created this ego amongst tattoo artists, and it's also created this false awareness of what this lifestyle brings. And, you know, I'm a father of five kids, and I live pretty humbly compared to some other people I know, and pretty great compared to other people I know, you know. So anyway, I thought of an idea of a tattoo shop that would, and the same misconceptions happen in the motorcycle and music world, you know. I got a buddy, Paul, that owns Bare Knuckle Choppers. He's one of the top builders in the United States. He just got back from Japan and went over there for the big Moon Eyes convention, and they paid for, and he struggles, you know, to pay the bills. I mean, and this guy, you know, he's got bikes that are, I don't know how much money he has in motorcycles on his showroom, but the bikes are worth a fortune, you know, and he's worked really hard and has magazine covers and all over the place, but he struggles on a daily basis. And if you talk to the outside world or the motorcycle world and ask them how much you think Paul makes a year, they would shoot you a number that's not reality, you know. Yeah. Same thing with the music industry, you know. Sure. look at Phil Moon, you know, and you know, he's the lead singer of one band and the guitar player for another band and still has another job.
Yeah, works at the point. He's on the point too,
yeah,
right?
Yeah. And people hear, I mean, he's even got a song for Disney now, you know, Disney films and stuff, but they're a national touring band, and that's still not enough these days. And I thought, man, so I come up with this idea of this reality show, and I talked to a few people, and they told me how they told me that they were very interested, but I wouldn't have the say-so like I want. So the only way to have the say-so like I want is if we fund it ourselves and film it ourselves, and then we can take that film and then pitch it to these different networks and different whatever. Yeah. So it's been about a three-year quest, but we finally got everything worked out except for all the funding. We're not quite all the way funded. I think we're going to do a Kickstarter.
I was going to ask you if you guys have thought about doing a crowdfunding. Seems very a great resource now. I mean,
we've got about $39,000 more to raise to make this happen by June, and we're doing it in June. So one way or another, it's happening in June, but we got about $39,000 left over that we have to do, or that we have to earn.
We actually just sat down today and we're discussing the crowdfunding thing and going that route, you know, because we weren't really sure if that's what we wanted to do. You know, we really don't have anything to offer people, you know, by helping us out with this, other than it's a great plan, and it's gonna show.
Well, you could even do as little like as t-shirts and things like that, and you know, I mean, yeah, obviously we've had a lot of people on here that have done it, like even Fivefold and Clockwork, and a lot of the local bands have been doing them to help get. And then obviously their return would be, you know, CDs and T-shirts and things. And,
right.
But you know, yeah, you guys could do.
And that's the problem with this is we're gonna pitch it. We've got several different avenues to pitch it after we film it, and I can say that I'm gonna do this for you and I'm gonna advertise for you.
Yeah.
But if this person picks it up, I have no say so in that. This person picks it up.
Yeah.
But our plan is we're gonna start here at the Ink Spot, and we're gonna travel to 15 different tattoo shops across the country on our motorcycles. There's gonna be six of us going: me, Bert, my buddy Red Dog, my partner Denny, Paul Weidman from Bare Knuckle Choppers, and then. Once we head up to Iowa, we're going to pick up Darren McKeague, who owns a tattoo shop up there, and he's big in the motorcycle industry, super cool guy. But then we're going to travel from shop to shop to shop, getting 3-hour-long tattoos at each shop, and then do a full circle and end back up here, with the last episode being at the block party.
Oh, so that's cool.
Nice. I mean, it's just, you know, I want to show the real side of things and show that, you know, it's nothing like what most of the TV shows are talking about. You know, our shop, we're a family. Like, everybody that's here, we are a family. We're not just people that work together.
Right.
Like, and we believe that a lot of the shops are like that. They're homegrown shops. that there's, you know, 15 other Big Daves out there that had a dream and refused to take no for an answer and turned it into something, and we want those people to be seen, you know. Mm-hmm. We want people to see that side of it and not some guy who got lucky and picked up on a TV show, you know. Not to say that the people on the TV shows aren't extremely talented, but but just show people that work their ass off to do it, you know. It's a blessing I have working with this dude every day, because when Dave brought this idea to me, like, I was packing my bags. I'm like, all right, I know we're doing it, because when, you know, people like Dave, they got a dream, they're going to get it, you know, and it's cool.
Oh, it's nice, too, it sounds like. And the problem I always have with reality shows that are on now is that it always seems like maybe it started with good intentions, but the entertainment side always times to take over. And anytime I see, like, any type of drama, I'm always like, this just feels so scripted. And it would be nice to see a more authentic, actual reality
right
at a show, you know, and not just something that's... Because, like you said, that then leads to these kind of fabricated or unrealistic views of how things go, and then people come in and say, hey, well, I saw this show, that, and you're just like, that's not reality.
I got filmed on a reality... Well, I got filmed on a reality show pilot, and it hasn't been bought or whatever, however they do it, but I got asked to be on this show, and it's not scripted, but it's arranged. It's manipulated and it's sculpted.
Right.
It's sculpted. The scenarios are sculpted. And then it's break. Now, I want you to do that with more enthusiasm. And then I want you to pretend like you're seeing this for the first time. And it's not in me to be fake, man. You know, just like if somebody asked me if I remember who they are, it's not in me to make up this lie. It's easier for me just to be true. So that's the problem. That's the problem we're having, is I've got a couple of avenues of people that would love to do this show, but I don't have the rights to. We don't have the rights to edit and control that process. Right. And even if this ends up just being a webisode series featured on YouTube or Netflix or Hulu or one of those, I would rather it not take off, but be an honest look at 15 different shops, so few different musicians, and the block party as a real thing, and let people see what the reality of these industries are, rather than this made up
so-called reality.
Yeah, I think you touched. I mean, like, we've talked before about, you know, document or docuseries kind of stuff like that, and like a Netflix is a cool avenue to where the you get a lot more exposure to some of that stuff that you might not have always, you know, really knew was out there. So that could be a cool option too.
The actual producer, the film crew that we've hired to do this has experience with a couple different television shows and actually multiple television shows. And he's got all the avenues to pitch this to Netflix and everything else. Yeah. So I know that, and then a couple other, I've been super fortunate to meet some people that have lots of avenues. So once this is filmed, edited, produced, I don't even know the proper terms, maybe produced isn't it, but once it's all put together in a nice package, then we have several different avenues to take it to.
Yeah.
So I'm excited about it. I'm just excited about showing. I mean, some of the people that we have picked out for this and that we've talked to, and some we haven't, but like one guy, there's a guy in Kansas City, like first is Darren McKeague, and he's in Iowa. He's definitely in, and he owns a shop. He's huge in the motorcycle industry. He's divorced. He's a father. His son is like his life. They ride together. They do different, you know what I'm saying? Like, and that dude works his ass off, man. I mean, that dude, I don't know when he sleeps, because he is either involved in some motorcycle event, or he's pinstriping and painting or tattooing, and the dude is able to produce art like nobody I know. I mean, he mass produces or he does one-off paintings. Anyway, he's phenomenal. And then there's a guy in Kansas City that we're stopping by, and he's a black and gray artist. He actually is one that I hit up on the internet one time about he's a phenomenal black and gray artist, and I'm inspired by his work, and I hit him up going, hey man, how are you doing your black and gray? Are you buying a pre-mixed gray shading, or are you mixing it yourself? Or, and he gave me his whole process and was super cool, and you know, he's got a story about how he ended up in the business, you know, and what inspires him and how he ended up where he's at. You know, some people end up in this business because they want the rock star lifestyle and they're single and they go out and people at bars buy them drinks. And some people are an ex-felon that couldn't become an art teacher, you know, that had to find a way to do art. And now I've grown this huge passion for tattooing. So, I mean, even amongst the shop, we've got five people in the shop, and all five of us have different realities, different stories, you know, different reasons why we're here, and different, you know, I think it'll be really cool to be able to show that to the world with, and the talent that we have picked out, to show the raw talent in the stories behind it.
Yeah.
No, I think, like I said, just seeing it more authentic, because I can't watch reality. Because I don't see it as reality. I see it as all script. So it'll be nice, and let us know, because I absolutely love to kind of check it out and just see, because it sounds super interesting. And just
I will let awesome. The world know. There world won't be know. Anybody yeah. with an earshot.
I just want you to just let me know. Nobody else. Let me watch it first. No,
here pretty soon we're going to be doing, you know, we're going to be announcing it on Facebook. It'll have a Facebook page. We're talking about the crowdfunding thing. So here pretty soon, like, some things are going to start getting put out there and start getting the gears turning and getting people into it, you know?
Yeah. It's exciting. I mean, it's, we're not really part of it, but just this little bit is exciting to be, have our, you know, to be able to do whatever we can.
You're part of the block party every year, and the last episode is going to be filmed at the block party.
Yeah.
And you guys technically are the first real public announcement of the reality show. Nice. I mean,
right.
Exclusive. Rock right. Paper Podcast, you heard it first.
There you go.
yeah, I mean, this should be a lot of fun. We'll see what happens. I mean, just excited to see what happens with it all.
Yeah.
So you mentioned...
Yeah, I'll say the thing about block party.
Yeah, I mean, that's... I know that's become one of my favorite days every summer now and for the last couple of years. And you guys started that here in the parking lot as a fan appreciation day.
Yeah.
And now it's blown up to a big event.
It's crazy.
It? Yeah.
It actually started, Robbie wanted to throw, we start tattooing on these bands. Yeah. And in the process of trying to meet these big bands, we met a whole lot of local bands that we became friends with, you know, and we actually started tattooing Copperview, and man, I love that band. I wish they were still around.
Yeah.
I wish they were still around too. I hope they're listening.
Yeah.
So, Black Party 2015, Copperview, let's make it happen.
Yeah. We started tattooing on them, and they introduced us to some other different local bands, and that's how it started, and we started tattooing on some local bands, and Robbie wanted to throw a party. He's like, hey, let's just shut down on a Saturday. We work every Saturday. Let's just shut down and have a party out in the parking lot and have a couple bands play. And I'm like, we'll call it a customer appreciation party, and we'll barbecue and whatever. And I had to, you know, justify shutting down for a day and throwing a party, you know. So we did.
I just wanted to have a party.
Right. So he just wanted to take off Saturday.
I just need a party on a Saturday right. for one time.
So that's what we did, and we shut down, and we called it a customer appreciation party, and we had a bunch of people out, and it was like 2 weeks' notice that we...
Yeah, it was no time at all.
We had a trailer, just a flatbed trailer backed up, and we had bands play on that. We had, you know... but it was cool. I don't remember how many people showed up the first year.
Like somewhere, I think our estimates were between 300 and 500, somewhere in there.
Wow.
Way more than we expected.
Right. There was a lot of people on 2 weeks' notice, and we were like, holy cow. So everybody kept asking, are you going to do this again next year? And we're like, yep. You know, so the next year we did it. And
the first block party, I don't believe it was billed as the first annual block party. It was just the 8-spot block party.
Right.
And then it was the second annual, third, fourth, you know, fifth annual.
Yeah.
So, yeah, we've grown it until we outgrew the parking lot, and then we had to move to the fairgrounds. And every year, like, once we funded it, and as it got bigger, it cost us more and more money, you know, mm-hmm. and we wanted to get it bigger every year. But then everybody's like, by the third year, everybody's like, you need to charge for this. You need to charge for this. And
yeah.
I had a lot of bands doing favors and playing for free or playing for next to nothing. You know, they were treating me really well, and I'm not going to return that favor by screwing everybody at the door. You know, that's not what this started as, even though it is a huge possible money maker.
The bands that are playing for free have told us, you know, sell tickets to this, you know, and they've done, I mean, Brian from Cavo, every year he hits us up and he's like, what can I do? What can I do to help you guys out? We need to, you know, and he's on it, man. Every year he wants to help us out. And the rest of the bands are like that too. They want to help, you know.
It's become something special. In the effort to not charge people money, and now that we're doing it at the fairgrounds and we're getting some of the bands that we've got, it costs a fortune. I mean, if you think of a wedding reception for 100 people, so plan a wedding reception for 100 people. I don't know how many were at your wedding reception, but I'm sure you got a dollar figure in your head. Now multiply that for 10,000 people.
Right.
Jeez.
That's what we're doing, you know? And last year we had 2 stages and 2 sound guys and, you know, 2 lighting guys and 2 of everything. And you know, so we take on local sponsors, you know, and that way, because I couldn't fund it. After the third year, I couldn't fund it anymore. You know, I went around and started taking on local sponsors, saying, hey, and in exchange for them giving us some money to help put this on, we hold their banner, you know, we put their banners up, display their banners, and put it on social networking sites. And our sponsors are people that we know personally and are either customers of ours or, right. I mean, it's a giant network of people, and we haven't went outside that network.
Yeah, that's one thing that I love about all of this is it's the community. You know, you got local bands, you got local sponsors, and local everybody. I mean, there's vendors, and it's all people working together to just have a good time. And like I said, I mean, I think even from the bands, you know, playing for free or cheap, you know, it speaks volumes. Of you guys, your characters, the people that want to be associated with this and want to be associated with you guys, and from the bands to the, like I said, the sponsors, and everybody wants to be a part of it, and it's cool.
Well, you said it best when you said community, man. I'm a super nostalgic person. I don't care what it is, like, I'm all about nostalgia. And when you go to that block party and you get that feeling of community, you get this feeling like, you know, of nostalgia, how it used to be, you know, these big town gatherings and just community, man. And it is a very, very heartwarming feeling to have all those people there.
Sure. Well, I feel like people are there to help. I mean, you know, I go to some of these big shows, Point Fest or whatever, and, you know, it always ends up getting out of hand somehow or another, people getting drunk and fighting you know, even as the crowds get bigger every year, it doesn't seem like we ever have any issues. Like, everybody gets along. We're all having a good time together. And
we've had some issues, but nothing.
Yeah.
I mean, last year, our and because we don't have a direct tally, we actually screwed up, I think. There's just guesstimates on how many people, but we had somewhere between 6,000 and 10,000 people there last year. Yeah. And the fair board and the fairgrounds and the cops all just praise us like it's my doing. You know, like I've kept, like somehow I managed to keep the crowd under control. Yeah, right. And but we've had less incidents there. I mean, we haven't even had to have a police presence in the place at all because pretty much people police themselves. You know, the third year out in the parking lot, we had a couple idiots that decided, you know, they had drank too much, and I don't know what their deal was. But it's amazing how, because it is a giant community, and somehow we all know each other. Or, you know, I may not know you, but you know her who brought you here. That, you know, and when stuff would happen, it kind of polices itself. It's like, no, not here. You're not doing that here. You know, we're here to have a good time, and which is awesome, man.
Sure.
You know, which is, I'm humbled by it, man. It started as something innocent and honest, and then we put some thought and effort into growing it and keeping it humble and honest, and you know, it's turned out to be something that I look forward to every year. That I'm amazed at how it grows and what it turns into. You know,
yeah. I mean, like said off mic, I mean, we've had Fivefold, Zach Michael, Dimmer Wade Trent, and you know, they've all played the show, and you know, some of them, you know, a couple times now, and they all have nothing but nice things to say about the day and how everything being a part of it, and they're all looking forward to doing it again, and that's cool to hear, like, you know, that everybody wants to be associated with it, and watching it grow every year, and makes me excited to think about the summer coming up. And
one of the coolest things, and it has happened every year at the block party, is there will be a point in the day where me and Dave will find each other, and usually block party day we see each other pretty sparingly because we're both running around and doing things, and there will be a time every time at the block party we run into each other, and it's just this genuine happiness of like, look around, man. Yeah. Sometimes it's when we're standing on stage and we're giving something away or we're just making some announcements, and you look out at all these people and it's like, man, like, this is you can't put it into words. I'm eternally grateful for you know, that kind of stuff that's come from this shop and from the block party. It's amazing.
And something needs to be said, man. Every year people thank me over and over and over, and like, I can't believe you did this, and they have all this, like, you know, I didn't. I know absolutely shit about throwing a concert. I'm here to tell you, I know absolutely nothing about throwing a concert.
Right.
So I've had a couple people, the big name people in the big name bands, go, you need to be a promoter. And I'm like, no, I don't. I hate this. I hate talking to booking agents. I hate that. But I know nothing about how a normal concert is thrown. We just started this up, but it is only because Scooter Baggins was our production manager, and I don't even know what that means, except for he handled all the bands and the times and getting them in and out.
Yeah.
And Fro is the one that hooked us up with DJ, the sound guy, and you know, that I've got a buddy Kirk who owns a boxing gym, that he loaned us two boxing rings we used and pushed together as a stage, you know.
Yeah.
I've got, you know, and it's just a network of people all doing their part, but somehow my face, because it was my idea, has become the face on it, which is cool, but at the same time, it's not. Like, there's so many people. Like, sure. Everybody goes into this to make this happen. And really, the day of, all I'm doing is running around helping out whoever needs help, because I don't know what I'm doing.
It was funny. It was a few months after this past block party. And, I mean, we get people all the time that you're walking through Walmart, and they're like, hey, you're from the Ink Spot, you know. And that becomes normal. And I was at Dollar General, and the guy working in there, he says, man, you're the MC from the block party. Because, I mean, I don't know how it happened. Somehow I'm just now the announcer guy at the block party. But he's like, you're the MC from the block party. And I was like, really? Like, you know, that's how you know me. I'm the MC. I mean, but it's cool, you know. Right. I mean, it's
he's not Robbie the tattoo artist. Yeah, I'm not
the Robbie the tattoo artist, or you know, I'm the MC from the block party. I'm like, cool, I'll take it.
Trying to request you like MC his wedding or something.
Right.
No, I could do some tattoos. No, I'm fine. I would rather have it, but I do tattoos like really well. I mean, no,
with the block party, I mean, you know, we hear and we've heard every year from the bands that. And these are not just bands that we're friends with. We are fans, you know. Most of these bands that are playing, like, one of us or all of us have been to several of their shows, and we're fans of the music or fans of what they do. And to hear them tell us over and over and over, you know, what a great event it is and how they look forward to it. Hearing musicians that I look up to telling me, like, this is a great event. We look forward to it every year. It's our favorite. It's our favorite show.
Mm-hmm.
Like, never in a million years did I think that I would be, you know, one of the faces of this huge festival we're putting on.
Yeah.
I mean, it's awesome.
Yeah, I think a lot of that. I mean, you know, as much as like we said before, you know, these bands just enjoy hanging out with each other because they're all friends and family and everything too. So for them to all be on one bill instead of, because they, you know, a lot of times they're all separate tour scheduling and everything. They're all over doing their own things, but this is a day that they can all hang out and relax and have fun too.
Oh, they do, man. They've had a wolf ball game going in the back.
We had somebody, one of our sponsors, actually suggested we bring in this band Emperors and Elephants last year, and I had never really heard them or listened to them, and we started checking them out on YouTube. We really liked their music, and we made it happen to where they were going to play.
And they're a national touring band.
They're not local by any means, and they come out and they had a conversation with Dave about, you know, that they had been on tour for years. What was it, like 2 or 3 years they've been on the road?
I don't remember exactly the
amount of time. And they flat out said, like, this is the closest we felt to home, you know? And that means something, sure.
Absolutely.
I mean, and they said it was a huge morale booster. He looked at me, and he gathered the band together and then cornered me, and they're like, I want you to tell, we've been out here for whatever period of time, and we've been touring, and it's frustrating, and it's hard, and it's difficult. And it's like, I gotta tell you, this has been the biggest morale booster. This is exactly what this band needed. I don't know what that is. You know what I'm saying? I don't know. Yeah. Like, it blew me away the first time I heard that, which was a couple years prior to that, that bands enjoyed this. I thought they were all doing us favors. But somehow, like, everybody seems to enjoy it, including bands, which is that means there's something special with this. It's not me doing something. There's something special. And that's why I don't want to change it. That's why I'm not going to charge ticket price. Last year, we put out in the field 50,000 tickets, free tickets. And if you didn't have a ticket when you showed, and we gave them to all our sponsors to give away. So if you wanted to come to our show for free, all you had to do is stop by and pick up as many tickets as you wanted, and you could get as many people as you wanted for free. If you showed up and you didn't have a ticket, then it cost $5. And that was a way that we could still give it away for free. But if you just didn't want to stop by one of our sponsors, and it also benefits our sponsors, people that are helping pay for this event, and that seemed to work out pretty good, you know.
Yeah,
I think there was only out of last year, I think there was only under 300 people that paid $5 at the door. So out of all those people, everybody went and got free tickets except for. Like,
and there's always been people that'll show up and they want to donate money. You know, they want to pay. They want to help the cause, whatever the cause may be. And that's super cool, you know. Yeah, that people want
to go buy a cheeseburger or T-shirt that's or what CDs we
tell
them. And stuff.
That's what we tell.
Hopefully,
them.
We find those same people when we do this crowd marketing thing.
Right.
Good deal. Well, have you guys picked out a date for the Ink Spot for this year? No.
No,
there's some dates in mind. We've just started having meetings about the sixth block party. And, I mean, I don't have any dates or anything, but I can tell you that this block party is going to be over the top.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, we've got this year, every year has gotten better. We get a little bit better about managing things and a little bit better about planning things. And I can tell you, our heart and soul has been into every block party so far, and this year is going to be over the top.
This year's going to be the best block party we've had, for sure. Like, that's not even a... And every year they've gotten better, but if things work out the way we think, and I'm not going to say anything on air yet, you know, just because I don't want anybody getting excited and then not happy if something falls out. But we've got a couple of different things going on. Plus, it's going to be filmed as the last episode of the reality show.
Oh, so that's right,
everybody that's going to be there potentially has the opportunity to be on the reality show.
Does the block party have a separate Facebook page or does it go with this?
There's the block party event page. It's on Facebook. You can find it through any of our personal Facebooks, or you can also find it through the Ink Spot's Facebook, or just get on Facebook and search for Ink Spot Block Party. There's tons of cool videos on YouTube as well. All you got to do is type in Ink Spot Block Party, and I mean, tons of the sponsors. We've got videos with them, and just different videos that fans have done at the block party. I love sitting and watching all the videos that people have taken.
I just shared one this week with It was Wade and Scott Gerken doing Maybe Tomorrow.
Yeah, so that was awesome.
Yeah,
Dude, that was one of the most special moments ever. To have Scott up on stage with Fivefold.
Sick Inside.
To have that happen in Lincoln County, to have, you know, was incredible. And then to have last year at the end, to have all the band members and come up and kind of do this impromptu version of Simple Man, and everybody singing.
I was backstage when it was planned long before, but everything kind of fell through at the last minute with that last minute jam that we did, and we all grabbed guitars and ran up on stage, and I mean all the bands were involved. I think everybody was on stage at some point.
I have a YouTube video of that one too, and like you got Emperors and Elephants guys, Brian Back's band, you and Scooter on guitar.
It sounded way better on stage than it does on the YouTube video.
being on that stage, that's one of my highlights of the block party. Just being on that stage, being able to play music with, you know, Scooter Baggins is one of my friends, you know, but to be up there and play guitar with him, who's a musician I look up to, and to be up there with Nate from Shamans and the guys from Emperors and Elephants, and Dave Kopp, you know, all these guys that I've watched play music, to be up on that stage, I was like, man.
Yeah,
it was amazing.
Yeah, all right, well.
Yeah, we can't appreciate how much you guys letting us come out, hang out with you guys, and chat with you, man. And best love. Like I said, here's the thing is, because I don't have a ton of money, the Blues win the Stanley Cup, I'm coming here and getting a Stanley Cup tattoo. Okay, so but love the shot, man. It's awesome, and I can't wait to hear more on the reality show. Hope it gets picked up, and the Inkspot block party
sounds like
it's
going to
be huge. So just can't appreciate enough you guys hanging out with us and taking time out of your day, and
well, thanks for asking us.
Yeah, thanks. Love it. Appreciate it.
Sorry it didn't happen sooner. I know
we've been talking about this for a while.
We got time.
Right on, man.
We had time to get better at doing our thing, so we're good. So.
Awesome.
Good deal. Dave, Robbie, thank you guys. And episode 42, Rock Paper Podcast. That's a wrap. Rock Paper Podcast. Rock Paper Podcast. Rock Paper Podcast, y'all.